Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to New Eridu. Today is Saturday, October 30th, 2010, and this is your host, the voice of New Eridu. Thousands of years ago in human history, the city of Eridu was built in what is now southern Iraq. It was built by a civilization known as the Anunnaki, whose advanced technologies and civilization conceived, gave birth to, and nurtured humankind. Under the leadership of the Anunnaki commander of Earth, known as Enki or Ea. Enki's interest in and love of humankind is well documented in Sumerian literature, and in Eridu, humankind flourished. Had Enki prevailed in Anunnaki politics, and had his plan for his human children been fulfilled, humankind might already have taken its place among the civilized races. From the seed that Enki planted deep within human DNA, that potential is now awakening. Now is the time for the sovereign, God-conscious human spirit, that miraculous gift of Source, to complete its awakening. It is time for the truth to come out, for the shackles on bodies, minds, and spirits to fall away. It is time for humankind to assert its sovereign right to stand as equals among the peoples of conscience. Welcome, Sovereigns. Thank you for spending your Saturday afternoon in New Eridu. And hello to everybody in the chat room. We have a very active chat today. I'm glad to see everybody. There's a lot of hearts flying around and flowers flying around. I love that. And a special thank you to those who are listening to the archives today. Believe me, I really appreciate that. And if you would, drop me a message every now and again. Let me know who you are and what you get out of the show. Let me know what's working for you and what isn't. I need to hear your feedback, too, because you're my listeners all.
Today's show is Pleiadians, Plejarians, please. And this is actually done on a promise. It was brought to my attention by the Pleiadians, with whom I have recently established contact, that I have not given adequate acknowledgement to one quarter of my genome, and that quarter is Pleiadian. And I apologize for that. I did not know how to go about it. I did not know if there was a proper protocol since I didn't have contact. And so I would state it, but then I wouldn't go any further than that. I didn't really have anything to say because I didn't have contact. I only had the words of other people who said that they had had contact to know what they were at all like. So since I've had contact with the Anunnaki, I could advocate for them. I could speak about them intelligently. But Pleiadians, they were a complete unknown to me in the first-hand sense. So I am now remedying that deficit, officially claiming that Pleiadian heritage, and also going to tell you a little bit about my experiences over the last couple of weeks. It has been a completely wild couple of weeks. Whatever people did on the 10th, even though that was an artificial date, even though that wasn't anything special as far as portal days or anything like that on the Mayan calendar, or, you know, really in any kind of measurement of time. It was simply a calendar number on an artificial system. But what made it special was that people focused on that day. And just that little bit of focus has unleashed an absolute tiger. I mean, things have just been ripping lately. And those energies have been concentrated on primarily making truth surface. And some of the ways that truth picks to surface aren't always pleasant. Sometimes the truth will come up in a very frightening or even dangerous way. If you're skating on thin ice and don't know it, you know, you might fall through and you might not. If you don't fall through, would you even know that you were skating on thin ice? Well, it seems that Enki was skating on thin ice and didn't know it. And when the truth started coming out, it put him in danger, and we almost lost him. He's okay. I cannot go any further than that on that particular line. But it was a very, very scary thing. And I no longer have contact with the Anunnaki. So that's interesting. I do have, however, still have a little bit of tenuous contact with the Elohim, which tells me that the Anunnaki are doing something that is, well, not good. Let's just put it that way. Not good. However, I do have contact with the Pleiadians. And it's not good contact. It's not as good as what I had with the Anunnaki when I did have that contact. I do expect to get contact with some of the Anunnaki back. Okay, not all of them are playing this game that's going on right now. And I really have to be careful when I talk about it because I don't want to expose them and I don't want to out them and I don't want to put them in danger, because if I did, I would put them in danger. It's that bad right now. Everything that was a cause of division amongst the Anunnaki before, our truth wave washed over them and exposed all of that, and it surfaced with vengeance. And in the end, it'll sort out. This is probably something that needed to happen as far as the Anunnaki are concerned. I think we had been hoping to get a more peaceful, more orderly transition of these things than what's going to occur. or is likely to occur, or maybe occurring right now for all I know, since I'm out of the loop. But, you know, they had to detox that. Their civil war left them with such divisions and the familial histories that some of these folks have left them with such deep wounds that the only way they're going to get through this is to purge it. And I'm hoping that that's what's happening right now. But in the meantime, when you have an entire society that's purging, it gets dangerous. We've seen that sometimes with some of the things that have happened here on Earth. I mean, the world wars were a purging of sorts. Sometimes it just has to, you have to pop the boil, you know. The boil has to come to the surface and you have to pop it, and I think that's what's going on. And we're doing some boil popping here on Earth, too, with the political situations and the monetary situations. I mean, that's not going to be fun. I don't care how you look at it. We've got powers that pretend problems that we still haven't surfaced fully. They're coming to the surface, and the infighting that's going on with them is getting stronger and stronger as that occurs. But and we can expect it to get worse before it gets better. But that's okay, because we'll survive it. Now, back to the main topic of the show, the Pleiadians. Bring you up to date, those of you who haven't listened to this show previously or may have missed an episode or two. After the 10-10 and through 10-13 energy window, where all of this truthful energy was released, there were a number of things that happened as far as the Pleiadians are concerned. Most recently, or I should say more recently, before I did my show last week, I believe, my husband actually had a contact with a Pleiadian in a dream. And let me tell you, he's a kind of person. He is not an astral traveler. He does not do magic. He is 3D. And I haven't really told him too much about what I knew about Pleiadians because I didn't have it firsthand. And I don't contaminate people that I think aren't already exposed when I'm talking about speculative stuff. So I didn't really talk to him about what other people's experiences with Pleiadians had been. So he didn't have, you know, he doesn't go out on the internet and read this stuff like some people do. He reads about motorcycles and engines and things like that. That's what he's into. He's not into aliens. He came to me with a description of Pleiadian and described the craft and the way the craft set down and the way the craft disappeared, and the way it deposited its payload, which was a Pleiadian female who he described in detail, her attitude, and to me it was clearly a textbook Pleiadian, according to what other people who have experienced Pleiadians have described. And so that was interesting, but she was looking for me. She wasn't looking for him. But he was not in a position where he could make that connection, so it didn't occur. Because I don't know how she got to him and not to me at the time, but that's okay. I don't care. But let me tell you, he's in love with this Pleiadian. He is, like, still obsessing about her. That's how powerful the effect of a Pleiadian can be on a human being. He is head over freaking heels. I've only seen him in love like that with a machine. So I told him he could have her if she would have him. But anyway, that was how that Pleiadian contact started. And a couple of nights after that occurred, I was expecting, you know, there's something else to happen, and it didn't. And so I went out on the deck, like I do always, in the evening, I usually get a glass of wine or something hot. In the winter, I do something hot. Go out on the deck and, you know, look at the stars and kind of take a feel of the earth. Because I spend most of the day locked up in an office behind a computer, so I don't have a way of getting in touch with the pulse of the planet, you know, while I'm in my office. I'm surrounded by too many electronics to really feel very much. And that's a time that I had set aside for having discussions with Enki and having contact with the Anunnaki and the Eloi. And since their little upheaval, that contact has gone away. So I'm standing out on my deck pretty lonely. Let me tell you, the silence that descended when that happened, I mean, oh my gosh, I didn't realize just how much traffic had been in my mind space until that occurred. And there was just dead silence, and I felt really, really alone. And it was disturbing to the point where I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep because if you've ever lived in an area that's really noisy, and then you get used to it and you sleep through it, and then you go somewhere else where it's not noisy and the absence of sound can actually keep you awake. Well, it was like that, only it wasn't exactly sound. It was more like just, you know, crosstalk. And it was gone, and it was just freaky. It kept waking me up. So it took several days to get past that one. Anyway, I went out on the deck, and I said to the Pleiadians, because I didn't know how to contact them. I just sort of put it out there. I just did an all-frequencies blast. Anybody, Pleiadian, pass this on. I know I have to ask you specifically for this contact and inform you that I am ready to have this contact. And I am doing so. I was told that you have to ask them very specifically and indicate certain things to get contact. That was told to me by someone who is a Pleiadian contactee. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but it did seem to work that way because shortly thereafter I did get the contact. Now, I didn't get it in a way that I expected. All right? This is not the same quality of contact I had with the Anunnaki. What I had with the Anunnaki was clear as a freaking bell. It was as if they were in the same room with me. It was telepathy on a very digital level, I guess you could say, the high frequency, high fidelity transmission. Like I said, just the same as if they were in the same room with me, and oftentimes I could see through their eyes. What I got with the Pleiadians was not like that. What I got was like somebody just sort of cracked open the door a little bit and was talking through it. They did not want me to see what they were doing. They did not want me to see them. They did not want me to know what they were thinking. But they had to talk to me. Somebody in their hierarchy had decided that I needed to be contacted. And I found out later, within like 15 minutes of the contact starting, I found out why I had to be contacted. And that was because of what was going on with Enki. And again, I can't go into the details on that, but it was necessary for me to do some things, which I did. And after that was settled, and they had had a chance to observe me in action, they started to talk a little more. And it's been a very slow and gradual process over this last week of gaining trust and getting a little more information. And again, it's individuals that start to trust you first. Systemically, they don't trust you very much at first. But individuals, just like what happened with the Anunnaki, with my contact with them, certain individuals will start to get a feel for you and start to get comfortable with you and start to open up a little bit. And then as they get comfortable, they sort of spread that comfort to others around them. So if you can get one of them to trust you, it's easier to get others to trust you. So there's my exopolitical lesson for the day. Get friendly with somebody. Get them to trust you. And don't do this with a bad thought in your mind, okay? If you're playing a game, they're going to find that, they're going to figure that out really fast, and you're going to blow it totally. If you're sincere and you're coming to them with an open heart, then, and I'm talking about any ET race, okay? Doesn't matter who you're dealing with. If you're dealing with somebody on astral or telepathic level, they will know whether you're up to something. It's just a matter of building credibility with them. Be patient. Don't push. Be polite. Be insistent, though. Don't stop. If you don't get what you want, don't stop. What I have seen of them. Okay, I'm reading in the chat room here first. I'm going to answer a question. Angelic Hope said, are the Anunnaki the lizard race? No, they are not. They are, some of them are, however, associated with them. And I don't have a proper name for the reptilians, so I just call them the reptilians. But no, the Anunnaki are not the lizards. They are, some of them have interbred with them. Some of them are politically aligned with them, but not all Anunnaki feel that way. There are a good number of Anunnaki who are very opposed to it. So that's the best answer I can give you. I do not know that awfully much about the reptilians, other than there has been some problems with them in the past. Okay, back to where I was. Excuse me. Here are some things that I've learned from the Pleiadians. First of all, I have been on a Pleiadian craft in the astral. I've been on Anunnaki craft in the astral also. I have not physically been on anybody's craft. So, take it as a remote view, because that's essentially what it is. When I am on their craft, they control what I can see very, very carefully. I am not seeing through their eyes. I am seeing through remote viewing using only my own apparatus. That's not the case with the Anunnaki. I was able to see through their eyes. They don't want me to see a great deal of what they have. I can tell. It's not an ugly thing. It's not, they're not, you know, being mean. They're not, I don't sense any subterfuge with it. It's not like they have bodies hanging from the ceiling or something they don't want me to see. It's just a matter of they're not ready to trust me that much. They don't know what my quantity is yet. And they have not seen me under the best of circumstances, considering what's been going on the last couple of weeks. So it's going to take some time to build that relationship and get that trust. But right now, I haven't seen awfully much. What I have intuited from what I have seen is that their craft are much larger on the inside than they appear to be on the outside, by many, many orders of magnitude. Somehow or other, that craft is itself a spatial manifold. I don't have a clue how they do that, but it's interesting. And it does seem to be capable of reconfiguring itself at will. Whose will? I don't know. But there it is. Now, I have not only been able to see the Pleiadians as the most vague humanoid outline. It's like a mist. It's like a shadow. And it's, again, this is not a matter of, they're not grays, okay? They don't have that same body morphology that a gray has with the big head and the little spindly. They look humanoid. They look like a person. Maybe some of them are a little bit tall. They're all fairly slender, but they're not skinny, skinny. Some of them are pretty, you know, some of the females are built, frankly. The males, sorry, they're not my type, but more for you guys, or you gals, I should. I don't think that they're hiding what they look like from me because they have something wrong with them. There's something about them they don't want me to see. I think at this point they're trying to keep the contact very generic so they can back out of it and leave not too much. I think, again, over time that's going to change. We're not at that point yet. Here's some things that they have told me. When I go outside at night, I can look around, and between 2 and 6 flashing lights are in the sky at any given time. And some of them are in very predictable positions, and some of them move around. The predictable positions are usually where there should be a star, a bright star. But what's there is strobing in primary colors like lasers. It is obviously not a star. It's positioned in front of one to fake people out. They have confirmed to me that those brightly flashing ships are theirs and that they're not going anywhere. They have things to do here, and they are going to continue to do them. They have told me, because I asked specifically about their alliance with the Syrians, and what they told me is that the Syrians are not an issue, although the Syrians think they are. I can take that in total to mean that the Syrians may have a problem. They may be having some kind of an agenda here, but that's not going to happen. So I think they're humoring them. The Syrians are a young race. And relatively speaking, they're a young race. They've achieved technology that is beyond really their wisdom. And they're having to learn. And they're not bad people. They're just young. And I have a feeling they're just teaching them. They're using this as a teaching opportunity. The Pleiadians are, that is. Another thing that the Pleiadians told me is that all humans have Pleiadian genes as well as Anunnaki genes, thanks to Enki. And that's something that Enki had told me. He had told me that he had passed on his full genome, and that would have included Pleiadian genes also. I was not sure. I was assuming he meant all, but I was not absolutely sure that he meant Pleiadian also. But yes, they confirmed that it is true. Some humans, they told me, also have other races, other star races, but that these are not as common. So that's a little bit interesting. I also figured something out, and I was able to confirm that with the Pleiadians. And that is, there is a threshold value below which one does not express the Pleiadian characteristics. As in, the number of dilutions in, you know, genetic separation. I'm 1/4 and I express easily. Below a certain percentage, however, that expression essentially goes away. They went on to tell me something else that was really, really interesting. They went on to tell me that I could increase the rate of expression, the Pleiadian part, at will. That if I decided I wanted to become completely Pleiadian, I could. Now, I didn't follow that one up to ask if I wanted to become completely a turtle or something. Could I do that? I don't think I want to find out. But it occurs to me that they might shapeshift. If they can change their genome at will, they might be able to shapeshift. I didn't see any evidence of that, but I didn't see any non-evidence of it either. And the ability to change a genome is pretty much implies the ability to shapeshift. I don't know how quickly that can be done, but I have a feeling they can do it very quickly. I have a feeling that anything that they put their will to, they can achieve almost instantaneously. There is a story that the Anunnaki told about when, before they came to Earth. This was in the days right after their civil war, where they were out conquesting to get resources to rebuild their planet, rebuild their civilization. And they were taking over worlds around them to mine, to grow crops, to work on genetic repair. And in some cases, some of the people actually turned to piracy, which is a pretty shameful thing, but it occurred. But one of the pirate groups had actually invaded a world that was held by Pleiadians and had booted them off the planet. After the Pleiadians left, about 2 weeks after they left, the planet basically turned into a desert, and it had been just beautiful. They thought, oh, this is going to be perfect. We have a paradise planet here. 2 weeks after the Pleiadians left, it turned to dust. The Pleiadians apparently have the ability to transform things according to how they want them to be. That's pretty powerful. I mean, I don't see where that ends myself. But there it is. Now, back to the how that has to do with the percentage of genes and how they, whether or not they're expressing. Those who can change their percentage of Pleiadian genetics or the expression thereof, those are called family. That's what that means. I didn't know what that meant. I had heard it referred to by several different people saying the Pleiadians are family, and they use specifically the word family. And I kind of adopted that with the Anunnaki just in the generic sense of, you know, genetic heritage, like you might with, you know, your biological family, because they are my biological family. But what I came into with the Pleiadians is there's another level to that. If you can do what they do, you are family. Well, my eyes kind of went really, you know, pie saucer big, because, again, there's power there, a lot of power. And I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to access it. They say I can. Obviously, I'm going to try. Obviously, I'm going to find others who have the same ability and try to teach them too, and be very selective in which ones I pick to teach first. But I have to figure it out first. So, how many of y'all in this audience are family? How many of you think you're family? I'd like to see a heart from everybody who thinks that they're family. I'd like to see that in the chat room. just out of curiosity, because I really I have no idea how many people are in that bucket. I'm going to play a song, and when I come back, I'm hoping that some people will call in and talk about the their Pleiadian contacts or their feelings about the Pleiadians or questions or comments. At no point, I want to make it very clear, at no point do I intend to offend anybody whose idea of Pleiadians may be different from mine. I can only relate my own experiences. So if you have a different experience, you're welcome to call in and talk about that. And, you know, correct the record or whatever. You know, I'm not an authority here. So just, you know, please call in. And I'm going to be playing The Stars Have Eyes by Ken Cole. And I remixed this song a little bit. So I hope you like it. And we're back. I was watching the chat. There's a couple of interesting topics that came up in there. The first one was seeking contact. And I think a lot of you that are gathered here may not have heard the full story of what happened with me. I didn't seek this contact. It just sort of happened. There's a whole long soap opera story that goes behind this regarding my origins and some powers that pretend hijinks that occurred that had to do with where I came from. But I had never seen a UFO until just about, I don't know, a year or two ago. And I had always hoped that there was other races out there, that we were not the only sentient race in the universe, because that would be pretty embarrassing of a showing for the universe to make, if that were the case. But I hadn't had any contact with them that I recognized as such. I had a contact when I was very young that I had taken as a spiritual contact. I thought I was dealing with a spiritual being. And it turned out I was dealing with Enki. And it was very much a temporal contact. Anyway, when he recontacted me about 2006, I wasn't the only one who received that contact. He was trying to reach out to anybody who was listening, and I just happened to be listening. And the way that whole thing unfolded, you really had to be in my skin to understand that all the way through this, I was checking, verifying what was going on. Because my specialty in life, it has to do with, you know, spiritual matters or whatever. I'm a magician. And I'm not talking stage magician. I don't want to say an occult practitioner, although I have studied the occult. I am an energy worker who uses the framework of magic. And with me, everything is directed, as far as the will is concerned, between me and Source. My business is with God, with Source, alone. And I was working within that framework of bringing down the will of God into Earth and expressing the will of Earth to God and making a resolution between those two things. So that was the framework I had been working from. I didn't have ETs in the mix. I had very few other astral entities in the mix either. I don't work with spirits. So this was kind of a surprise. Okay. If anybody wants to talk about anything, switchboard is open, and I'm taking callers. I put the number up earlier. I think y'all can see it in your chat box, too. I'm looking back in the chat here. There were some other things also I wanted to touch on. UFO abductee put up in there that he was, I think it's a he, she, someone, was put in a breathable gel pool. And I have had that experience. I have in the past been in that situation. That occurs when you have a purpose to achieve and you need medical help to survive long enough to get there. And you, 9 times out of 10, if you have that experience, don't even know what's wrong with you yet. So, in my case, I knew what was wrong with me. I thought I knew what was wrong with me, I should say. Let's see here. Anything else that I can answer in here? I don't see anything. It looks like there's just a conversation going on. It's an interesting conversation between Angelic Hope and UFO abductee. I think what I'll go ahead and do at this point is to continue with some speculation. What can we expect from the Pleiadians? Okay, we know that they're here. Most of us have that are aware of other races. You know, we're pretty sure that they're here. That's not news. But what can we expect from them? What have we seen so far from them? Most of the descriptions that I have heard is that they are very friendly, very open. They're smart. As I mentioned in my description, they're sexy. They have very open society, very open minds. They don't particularly live in a family structure like we might recognize here. It's not like husband and wife and kids and, you know, the extended family like that. Instead, it's more of an alliance of, you know, of will, of the moment, of it's so open. There's almost not words for it in the human vocabulary. They just are open-hearted, and while they may stick, you know, certain numbers may stick together for extended periods of time, there's no commitment involved in it. The commitment is only what that person wants to make of it at any given time, and it's always open hand. And there's good to that, and there's also scary to that, and I'm glad that they are capable of living like that and being open like that, because it's very hard to have animosity with another person if you're completely open-handed with them. So that's commendable, and I hope that one of these days we will learn how to live that way. I have a caller, and this is Constantine for Abilene. Constantine, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, I have a question, and this is a serious question. Please don't be irate with me. This is a legitimate thing. I'm trying to do some research on this. If you don't believe, agree, that's fine. But I've been studying a hypothesis that perhaps the UFO people, whatever they are, actually are Nephilim. In other words, they're some kind of demonic creature of some sort. Any thoughts about that?
Okay. I've actually discussed the Nephilim in earlier shows, and I'll be happy to talk about it again. This is what I was told by the Anunnaki, that the Nephilim are a specific set of entities that were genetically engineered by the Anunnaki. And they were specifically engineered to be warriors, gladiators, and sports performers. And that the giants that were described in the Bible and in other sources were descendants of these engineered beings after they had interbred with humans. That's what I was told, and it seems to track with the references that you can find in human history. That's not to say that this is absolutely true, because I don't know it. I can't prove it. That's what I was told. I think that if you study the question of evil, particularly from the biblical perspective, that you will notice that it swaps sides. The vengeful God will be called one name, and another time another name. And then the peaceful God will have the other name. And it depends on whose sect was on top at the time when that story was made. It really is a matter, it's a mess. What you're seeing in our religious history is the hijacking of human belief to reinforce the power of the Anunnaki over the human race. And not all of the Anunnaki believe that this was the right thing to do. And that's why they ended up fighting each other, and it got very ugly. And it's going to get more ugly before it's done. Does that answer your question?
Sort of. So in other words, your answer is yes, you have heard of that theory before. The thing is, what I find intriguing is the fact that people usually who believe in abduction theories, generally speaking, do not believe in a supernatural kind of connection. In other words, that it's more of a science-based belief in the field of paranormal research. And, I thought it was intriguing. The connection.
Well, first of all, I'm not talking about abductions, okay?
I'm just talking about the beings. Whatever the beings do is irregardless. Yeah. I'm just talking about, you know, they are or they are not spiritual beings that either, A, possess people or are fruit of some kind of weird union that isn't possible anymore or I don't know what. That's why I was doing the research.
Yeah. Okay.
Empirical data would be pretty hard to find.
Yeah, I can guess. I'll tell you what I do.
Well, actually, if they interbred with human beings, you could test their DNA, and they would find the mitochondrial connection, but you'd have to get a body.
Right, that's actually correct. You could do that.
That'd be really easy to prove if you could get one, but...
Yeah, I think those that are like that are not going to be announcing it because we don't want to become government experiments again. I think there are people out there that have that, and they are aware of it. And I think that there's issues with that. You have to understand that the powers that pretend, the ones that have the genetic science that's capable of messing with this stuff, are not the good guys. All right? So let's just you are hitting very close to home with me.
This is judgment free. I'm just looking at this from a somewhat spiritual scientist, I guess what you might call me.
I know. Now my background is actually in my day job for a number of years was hard science. I was in research and development. And so I have that background. I was a math and physics major. I've spent a lot of years doing technical writing and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm very much into the sciences as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have
any
no
idea, any comments or thoughts about Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Yeti, anything like that as far as an extraterrestrial connection? Any thoughts at all?
Show me a body. A real one. I have no thoughts on Sasquatch or Yeti. I think there's enough circumstantial evidence. I've known people who claim that they have had encounters.
No, my question is, do you think that there's some kind of extraterrestrial connection, the development of the race, should it exist, is my question.
It's possible that they may have been like an early experiment of some sort, but I don't have any answer for you on that one. I haven't been told anything about it. I didn't ask though.
Mm-hmm.
I should have asked, but I didn't ask.
Well, my research, new, and it's like it's something that people haven't looked into before. Obviously, I'm probably not going to look into anything, but still intriguing. Just asking questions.
Yeah, it is. No, that's okay. That's what you're there. That's what you're calling in for.
I'm not being rude or disagreeing with you or anything. I'm just asking what your opinion is, that's all.
No, that's fine. You don't have to apologize. I'm a very open person, and I'm almost impossible to offend. So don't worry about it.
Well, I'm not going to try, so. All right. Well, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate
it.
If you ever have any thoughts, feel free to share them with me.
Well, friend me on Blog Talk, And we can have discussion later on, too. And, of course, if you ever want to call into my show again, you're perfectly welcome to do that, too.
Okay.
I'm sitting here trying to figure out what I'm going to do for the next 3 minutes. I've got 3 minutes left here. So did you have any other things you wanted to say or ask at this point?
So in other words, you really haven't had given much thought that if you believed that there is genetic. So in other words, it just seems surprising to me that people would believe that there's some kind of genetic hybrids between human beings and extraterrestrials, wherever they're from. They believe that but they wouldn't believe that like, for instance, if a creature, you know, cryptozoology like Bigfoot or something exists, it might have been because of extraterrestrial experiments with great apes and human beings. It doesn't really seem that much of a stretch. I'm not saying they actually exist. I'm just saying, theoretically speaking, you know.
Yeah, it's not much of a stretch. You're right. And like I said, I'm not ruling it out. I'm just saying I don't have any information on it.
Mm.
That's not been something I've really inquired on.
Mm.
So I stick with what happens to me. I stick with my experiences. And some of them I can prove and some of them I can't.
Well, I'm an idealist. That's the greater good kind of thing. So, but thanks.
Thank you, Constantine. I'm going to go ahead and close out the show at this point. And please call back on another show and we can continue our discussion. This is a good one. I'm going to go ahead and just put you on mute here and close out the show. And closing out the show is Orion 300 XB by Kevin MacLeod. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Come on back next week.